So for arranging this wonderful workshop, it's always good to be into a vibrant atmosphere of Perimeter Institute. I always enjoy it. And I apologize for skipping quite a bit of talks. I promise I'll watch everything on videos and follow the lecture notes of my fellow attendees. But it's my loss, because I would love to be here much longer. It's just during the semester that it's hard to escape teaching and other duties. Also, I have to somewhat apologize for not telling you too much about Koha. I'm not really an expert on this. So the reason I'm giving this talk, and it will be a completely different subject from probably most of the talks here, so I'm hoping that some of you may understand how to interpret it in terms of Koha. So this is more for you, food for thought, if you wish. I think there are several talks relating Koha's to vertex algebra, so I definitely rely on these people like Miroslav, David, Thomas, maybe will say something related. So I'll try to make a kind of bookmarks in my talk where I think it may be connected to those. And again, it's more food for thought. I actually have to thank Jan for introducing me to Koha many years ago in the context of various knot invariance topology. And that's what the talk is going to be about. So if you don't understand anything I say from now on, just from the bird's point of view, what's going on here is a relation between topology and algebra. So algebra will be somewhere here. So I'll try to relate in this talk topological structures and algebraic structures. And the journey goes through physics, which is a good thing and a bad thing. Bad thing because mathematically this will be complete black box, so it will be going through the black box, literally and figuratively. But it's a good thing because for fellow physicists and including myself, there is actually very interesting rich physics in this story. So the plan of the talk will be as follows. I'll give a fairly long introduction. Then I'll state some conjectures. And then we'll talk about characters. So there will be only one mathematical definition in this talk. And unfortunately, it won't appear for the first 40 minutes. But I'll, again, try to wake you up whenever that appears. There can or cannot be one theorem in this talk, depending on my time, how well I do on time. There is a precise mathematical statement, which is, again, a theorem. And I'll try to state it if in the appropriate time. All of this will happen in part three. So the first two parts don't even have a mathematical definition. So the link between topology and algebra will be not the way that usually the link goes, in the sense that often we use algebra to probe or study topological structures. So in this talk, M3 will stand most of the time for a closed 3-manifold, and M4 will stand most of the time for closed 4-manifold. So these are typical gadgets of low-dimensional topology that we want to study. And the standard approach is that we feed a lot of algebraic structure into the game to say something about these things. So here, the goal will be, or the process in this, it's not process of the talk, it's more like the whole research program that people pushed for many years, is to produce algebraic structures which come out of structures of 3-manifolds and 4-manifolds. So not that you're feeding algebra to study topology, but the other way around. So the flow is, in some sense, opposite. So the roadmap of this program is that to a 3-manifold, you can associate a 3-dimensional physical theory. So this is the physics part, which often is called T of M3. And this functor, again, you should think of these arrows as kind of functors that to an object from this category, you associate an object from category of these theories. So the functor actually is a collection of functors. It depends on additional choice of root system, or you can think of it as a gauge group if you're trying to make some construction in terms of cohos or sheaves. So G will be the structure group. And for my talk, I'll focus on Cartan type A, and moreover, I'll mostly talk about or focus on rank one case. So rank one is going to be all that we'll care about. So in the world of three manifolds, you associate to a three manifold a theory which depends on choice of three manifold and group G. This theory is called T of M3 and sometimes T of M3G. I'll assume that G is kind of fixed. So therefore, not to avoid, in order to avoid clutter, I'll just label it as T of M3. And the idea of this program is that this theory is a physical theory. It's rich enough. It contains a lot of information about corresponding three manifold. So you can compute, for example, Cyber-Quitten invariants of a three manifold and possibly other topological invariants as certain partition functions of this type of theory. And for a four manifold, analogous statement would be that you associate a two-dimensional 0,2 theory, supersymmetric theory in two dimensions, called T of M4, again, which depends on choice of additional gauge group and so on, such that you can compute various invariants of, in this case, four manifolds as partition functions of this theory. For example, Cyber-Quitten invariant is probably one of the most well-known or famous invariants. So depending on your background, where you're coming from, your motivation might be that by studying this sort of relations, you may produce interesting new invariants of three manifolds, four manifolds. That's actually, in part, my motivation. Or study interesting physics. I'll tell you a little bit about physics of these theories, and I apologize to mathematicians. You can fall asleep. Like I said, I promise I will wake you up when single definition of theorem will come up. And if you're interested mostly in algebra, which I guess true for many of you here, then you can think of it as way to produce algebraic structures which come from topology in a natural way. And I'll tell you in a second or a bit later why, in what sense Cyber-Quitten invariants are algebra. So they look just like numbers. I don't want to assume any prior knowledge of topology. So however, I have to say something concrete about three manifolds and four manifolds. By the way, feel free to interrupt me at any stage. So I'll limit myself to a very simple and nice class of both three manifolds and four manifolds, which are labeled by graphs. Not just graphs, but decorated graphs, to be more precise. So imagining a picture like this, of which physicists may want to think and probably should think as some sort of Feynman diagram, or better yet, quiver type description of some gauge theory, where vertices are labeled by integers, A1, A2, A3, A4, will be various integers. So AI. And they are connected by edges in various numerous ways. So this kind of graph will be input data for much of what I'm going to say in my talk. So I'm not going to tell you how three manifolds and four manifolds are constructed out of this data. There are many different constructions, which in the world of three manifolds involve either surge representation or triangulations or Higgard decompositions of various sorts. And there are analogous things in the world of four manifolds. And what's interesting is that among these many constructions, this class sits at the crossroads. So this data of a decorated graph actually labels either surge representation or triangulation or Higgard diagram. So it's a very useful or kind of broad presentation.
Finite graph,
yes. It can be arbitrary size. So good thing is that it's a big enough arena for us to play that you have as many vertices, as many edges, all kinds of connectivity structure. And each vertex is labeled by an integer. So there are plenty of things to talk about. And again, this sits at the crossroads of many constructions, which in the case of three manifolds cover a lot. In the case of four manifolds, I'll be completely honest, they cover a little. So actually here, we'll be close to like landscape, or at least seeing horizon. Here we will be very far from seeing any kind of horizon. Okay, just to give you an example, if you have a graph that consists of a single vertex labeled by integer, so let me call that integer p, then this is, in the world of three manifolds, a Lend space. And today in this talk, I'll focus on three manifolds. Such graphs describe both three and four manifolds. But so it's, you kind of kill two birds with one stone. So I told you basic facts from topology that relates to both three manifold topology and four manifold topology in the same time. So single vertex is basically a Lend space. If you draw the Dynkin diagram of A8, 1, 2, 1, 2, 4, that's correct. So -2, -2, -2. Label all the vertices by -2. Then you get a Poincaré sphere. So another example of a slightly different kind is also a graph which has this tree-like structure. -1, -2, -3, -7. So this is related to knots. It can be presented as surgery on so-called figure eight knot. And finally, since I'm running out of space, if you have single vertex but allow loops, you start producing non-simply connected manifolds. For example, this is a graph description of a three torus. Well, I mean not homology sphere, sorry. Yeah. So this is indeed non-simply connected by...
non-rational.
Yeah, non-rational, right. Yeah. Okay, so this is the kind of input data with examples. Useful data that will also associate to this graph is its adjacency matrix. I'll call it Q. So you can think of this data of the graph as a lattice generated, which has as many basis vectors as vertices in a graph. And this is the stage where, if you start thinking about it as a lattice, you may want to consider, first of all, graphs without loops. So for simplicity, let's assume that's the case. For example, this last case won't be allowed in that situation, and or what's drawn on the board will not be allowed. And also, it's convenient to assume that this matrix is definite. So again, this will be a technical assumption for exposition, but I'll be happy to relax it toward the end, or at least say what happens if you try to relax. So if I define adjacency matrix of such graph to be Q, let's assume that it's definite. I think my conventions will be that negative definite is better than positive definite. Okay. Now, any questions? So everything in this talk will be labeled by graph, all structures.
So adjacency matrix means that you put on the diagonal these numbers.
Exactly. So you put on a diagonal at a value QII, you put AI. If I and J are connected by an edge, you put 1. Otherwise, you put 0. OK, so now I come to algebra. And without describing it in too much detail, I can ask, what is the natural algebraic structure that one can associate to these type of theories? So these theories are some physical supersymmetric theories, but that's a good news because they have a supercharge. So you can try to ask about cohomology. And in the context of 0-2 theories, the cohomology, so it has supersymmetry in so-called right-moving sector. If you take cohomology, you basically get chiral algebra of the theory in the left-moving sector. So you get naturally a vertex algebra. So one natural algebraic structure that you can associate to this lower parallel development is vertex operator algebra, which I'll call VOA labeled by that corresponding four manifold. And this just, from the physics point of view, one of the many things that you can ask about this physical theory. Good news is that many other things, such as Cyber-Quitton invariants, in some sense are contained in here. So in fact, Cyber-Quitton invariants, in a very traditional sense, can be obtained from correlators of this vertex separator algebra. So that's a good way. It's one of the many things that physics can do, but it's a very useful machinery. And luckily now, it's definitely in the world of algebra. So that's where real algebra is coming. Oh, that's why I said let's not worry about this. Let's assume that it's A without loops for simplicity and definite also, because I'll be happy to comment on loops later on and even relax definiteness in later in the talk.
Yeah. So will you really use graphs, or you need just a matrix?
I'll use either way is fine. So I'm trying to limit myself to some class which will be comfortable to the audience so that everything will be combinatorial, defined either by a graph or rather by a tree, if you wish, in the beginning, by matrix. And then I just want you to know that there is a bigger world. So for example, if you're already comfortable with graphs and trees, next right question to ask is how what I'm going to tell you generalizes to the case of loops, relaxing definiteness, and eventually replacing this graph data by most general three manifolds and four manifolds. Unfortunately, they're very non-algebraic, so that's why to, again, limit myself to something combinatorial that's convenient, I'll use just either matrix or the graph or tree as an input data. So if you ask analogous question, what can replace this vertex algebra? So here it's not very esoteric, but if you ask what replaces it in the world of, in the first parallel line of three manifolds producing some three-dimensional n equals two theory, the story is a little bit more delicate because it's known for a long time that two-dimensional theories are related to conformal these are conformal theories, that 2D conformal theories are related to vertex algebra. So that's not a big surprise. But three-dimensional theories are not related to anything canonical from old days, so we have to kind of ask, what is the analogous question? And this is much less developed. So I don't know the good answer to this, but I can offer one answer, which somehow will participate and play a role, that you can associate a modular tensor category also labeled by choice of three manifold and root system G. And in both cases, the standard definition of vertex algebra and modular tensor category has to be taken with a grain of salt. It needs to be sometimes relaxed, sometimes in an obvious way, like this can be super algebra and so on and so forth. But sometimes it has to be relaxed even further that this may not be seen as simple tensor category. So therefore, it's not a standard. Yes.
You wouldn't expect this to be a braided category. You'd expect the OP of lines to have poles. So
exactly. So I'll precisely. I'm that's where I'm heading. Okay. Fortunately or unfortunately, it's going to make it interesting, and that's where the structure is going to come from. So the first one is discussed in work with Pavel Putrov and Kumran Vafa from several years ago. This is from 2016. And the last one has been studied for a long time. So there is a summary in a recent paper with Boris Fagan from last year. And another one will be on the way shortly. So I'm not going to review the story too much. I just want to give you kind of a glimpse of what was happening in this area, because I'll try to get to new development which somehow relates to it, but not necessarily builds on it in a crucial way. What kind of MTCs you can get in this way? First of all the familiar and good ones, for example, Kitaev's story code, can be obtained in as MTC of some particular three manifold, or in fact, some three-dimensional n equals two theory. Fibonacci anions. Or also in here, there is close cousin of the toric code model, which is called three fermion model. So this is tensor category with three simple objects, and a toric code has two simple objects. You can get even more traditional MTCs, which come from quantum groups, Verlinde algebras, and so on in the same way. So again, I'm not going to discuss it in great detail, but I want to give you an idea where this tensor category comes from, because this is perhaps not terribly surprising, or at least I hope it's less surprising than the first line. At least to me, this was a little bit more interesting. So and this is mostly to physicists, perhaps. But it precisely answers Kevin's remark or question. That the three-dimensional n equals two theories have very little supersymmetry to be fully topologically twisted in three dimensions. So they cannot. So for now, I'm talking about, in fact, generic 3D n equals two theories, except that I'll make an assumption, that technical assumption, that R charges from a physics standpoint are integer. So you can consider such theory on you can do topological twist partially in two dimensions. Again, especially if R charges are integer, you can put it on a Riemann surface of any genus, any curvature. So the picture is roughly this, that you have a circle across a Riemann surface. And the kind of twist that this three-dimensional n equals two theories admit is analog of a model twist, familiar from mirror symmetry of two-dimensional sigma models. And from the viewpoint of a 2D system, you can think of it as essentially a model with infinite collection of fields labeled by Kalitza-Klein modes of three-dimensional theory on a circle with a twist. So what it does for you, it behaves very much like a model or a twisted two-dimensional theory from the Riemann surface point of view. In particular, it associates numbers for any choice of 3D n equals two theory. It associates numbers to circle cross Riemann surface. It associates, if you try to cut Riemann surface along some boundary, so here you'll find some Hilbert space of this effective kind of a model. So maybe I should be erasing Riemann surface and going in the standard technology of extended TQFT or RT Fleur type axioms to lower dimensions. So this will give a vector space, a Hilbert space. And if you go all the way down to a point, so on a circle across a point, such twisted 3D n equals 2 theory to this setup will associate a category, just for the same reason that two-dimensional theories.
I have another pedantic comment. So I had this paper with Mina and Cameron and Jacob about twists of these 3D angles too.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just look in three dimensions, you can make a topological on the surface, but there is a supercharge which squares the rotation of the circle, which gives you the A twist. Is that the one you're using?
Supercharge. I'm not sure, so I have to check, because I don't remember in particular what you say in that paper.
Like if you want a supercharge which squares to zero in three dimensions, you can't make it topological. But if you want it to square to zero in two dimensions, you can. But then in three dimensions, it squares to circle rotation. Maybe that's what you're...
Yeah, I don't remember off the top of my head.
It might also just be n equals four if you have this assumption S1.
No.
This is probably different. Yeah, it's really n equals two. Yeah, but it's like a model on Riemann surface where, yeah. So what I want is effectively a model on Riemann surface. So I think I understand what Kevin is asking. I'll be happy to double check it and get back to you. So all we are using is that numbers to Riemann surfaces, vector spaces to one dimensional objects, and categories to points. So it's this category that we want to associate.
But is it quantification? I mean, are you trying with equals Klein modes, or are you keeping?
Keeping all colors of Klein modes. So in fact, therefore, this question is very relevant, because if I don't keep them, then indeed time dependence drops out. But that's a good question. There is another, so that's kind of conceptual way to look at it. There is very practical way, especially for computational purposes, that people consider so-called twisted indices, which are basically partition functions of such setup. So you can try to compute partition function of any 3D n equals 2 theory on S1 cross Riemann surface of genus G, again, assuming that such thing exists. And in practice, what you often find is sum over solutions to what people call Batanzas equation, critical points. I'll denote them by lambda. So this runs over a set of solutions to Batanzas equation, which physically arises as critical points of so-called twisted superpotential. So equations have the form exponential of variation of W tilde with respect to log Zi. This is very reminiscent of, indeed, Batanzas in trigonometric or hyperbolic integrable systems, where both variables and then functions are exponentiated. So what you're summing can be written as matrix elements of S matrix, values 0 lambda, where 0 is identity object of that MTC, and lambda it runs over all simple objects. So you can actually read off matrix elements of at least S matrix, and similarly you can find T matrix in the story if you try to compute this type of partition function. So this goes to the power 2 minus 2g. So this, of course, from the MTC point of view, is similar to summing over lambda of quantum dimensions of the corresponding modules and lambda to the, again, 2 minus 2g. So this is a more practical way if you want to know which MTCs to associate to different 3D n equals 2 theories. You can play with this sort of partition functions and quickly extract matrix elements for S and T matrices, which, at least to me, encode the most interesting data or important data about modular properties of this category.
G is greater than 1 for
you? And G can be anything, so.
But what do I do, for example, when G equals 2 1? So we have infinitely many computation, and what do I mean by this?
Oh, no, no, no. It depends. So in most situations that arise, lambda runs over finite set.
Ah.
So yeah. Sorry. And I guess if lambda happens, if there are infinitely many solutions, you regularize. But that's indeed an interesting generalization of it.
For the moment, the model tensor category is not necessarily a category of like defects or anything. It's just what comes out of.
I think I remember even in the paper we make some comments about describing it as a category of line operators, or at least relating it to it. But again, it's been a while, so I don't remember. But I think there might be such a or there is such a formulation. No, no, I did not. I meant that the category, it's closely related, because the category that we're going to find in this kind of effective 2D topological field theory, again, think about this three-dimensional theory as effective two-dimensional theory which lives on the Riemann surface. And ask, what does it associate to Riemann surface? To one manifold and to zero manifold, which is a point. And circle always goes for the right. So basically, whatever I'm going to find here, normally it's a category of corners of boundaries, right? Boundary conditions. So, but in this case, it's going to be closely related to line operators which are allowed to wrap the circle. So Davide is absolutely right that it's, if not directly related, at least a close cousin.
Something like a k-theoretic Fekai categories?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know what that would be, but yes. Yeah. It's basically a K-theoretic version of Foucault category, or at least it's trying to be one. So this was discussion for general 3D n equals 2 theory, which again is interesting and perhaps worth looking at. If you are not an expert in modular tensor categories, you can just focus on SL2Z action on a vector space, which again from you is going to be finite dimensional, and can be thought of as a Grothendieck group of this modular tensor category. And now I'll start coming back to original goal in the context of this relation between topology, physics, and algebra. Everything originally was labeled by topological data. And for concreteness today, we decided to label everything by graphs. So therefore, you can actually ask what is vertex algebras and modular tensor categories are for this kind of graphs. Yes, V is a ring. It has. No, I don't. Yeah, I don't think it does.
Just that's shown on the vector space.
Right. Right. In fact. In our context, there will be two natural ring structures. So if you think about, so that's, okay, so since you ask, I'll mention it. It's kind of a delicate point. So in the context of not generic 3D n equals 2 theories, but which come from this graph, so three manifolds more generally, you can also identify the space with a space spend on connected components of complex flat connections on, in this case, say, three manifold of all complex flat connections. On M3. And here, you also have a natural ring structure coming from this description, but that's actually not the one that appears in Verlinde algebra that we care about. So, but in any case, one of them is preserved by SL2Z and the other is not. But anyway, it's probably not terribly relevant. So in any case, if you want something concrete, for example, if you want to work with graphs that describe, say, Poincaré sphere or something else, you'll find that it gives you an easy way to say, for example, what's the dimension of this space? So very roughly, it's basically the number of connected components of flat connections on that three manifold. But I want to emphasize the word all because later in the talk I was planning to focus on, I mean, we'll see yet other types of flat connections.
So, do you have any assumptions on G right now? Or?
I think you walked right after I mentioned that. In this talk, it's of type Cartan type A and also rank 1 for me in this talk. I mean, most of the examples I'm going to give, so this is still a long introduction, but anything concrete I'm going to say is only in rank 1.
So. Then
it's just one dimensional, so that's good. It's it's a very boring SL2Z representation. But if it's Poincaré sphere, for example, and G is SQ2, then there are a total of 3 flat connections, and we have the same representation as for the Ising model. So it has 3 objects, for example. And then it's a fun game to play to ask, OK, how can I recognize some familiar MTCs, for example, for Ising model, for Fibonacci anions, from some of the simple examples? In the case of U1, which also is a legitimate choice, as you can probably guess, the corresponding VOA would be just a lattice algebra. And MTC is the corresponding MTC. So that's kind of, if in doubt, always ask about U1. So that's.
Yeah. So this is just lattice theory.
Oh, no, no, no. It's so again, in the beginning, I talked in parallel about four manifolds and three manifolds. In the world of four manifolds, it's basically second cohomology of the four manifold, but not only assuming it's four manifold is defined by this graph. So that actually equivalent to assuming that it's simply connected. Because if it's not, then there are also pieces in this VOA coming from odd cohomology of the four manifold. And again, assumption that definiteness plays a role here. So I made several assumptions in the beginning. No, it does. It does. So there is, there are roughly, for this VOA, there are roughly, even in the abelian case, when G is U1, there are roughly three pieces. One has to do with H2. In fact, it splits into H2 plus and H2 minus, which correspond to left-moving and right-moving modes in two-dimensional theory, this T of M4. So this is one piece. Then another piece has to do with odd cohomology, H1 plus H3. So that goes as its own components. It's kind of motivic. And then there is H0 plus H4, which is yet another piece. So this is another copy of, say, hyperbolic lattice. And you have to say what you mean by positive and negative eigenvalues and so on. OK. Anyway, this is a fun story. So it's been going on for a long time. And it's, of course, interesting question to ask, OK, for what manifolds do we get different algebras and vice versa, because they encode a lot of useful topological information. But this is not what I'm going to talk about. So I want to kind of tell you the recent developments which are related to this, related but somewhat unexpected. So what I describe is a long-going program. It's not a paper. It's a research program. But what I'll say next is a little bit out of that order in the following sense, that as the reason I try to emphasize these two lines is that natural thing to associate to three manifolds is not necessarily vertex algebra. But this is what we're going to do next. And the statement or this observation, which is a little unexpected, can be phrased in terms of conjecture. I have very not such a strong evidence to this conjecture. I'll tell you in a second what the evidence is. But roughly speaking, it says that if you have the same sort of, say, graphs, or more generally three manifolds that we discussed before, labeled by integers a1, a2, and so on, to this, just like in previous cases, depending on additional choice of root system, you can associate a logarithmic vertex operator algebra, which naturally might be labeled by this data of this graph. And as you can see, it doesn't quite fit in a sense in the previous discussion, because in the previous discussion, four manifolds gave birth to vertex algebras, and three manifolds had to do with modular tensor categories. But so it's kind of going across lines or where two things are talking to each other. And secondly, in general, such vertex algebras will be logarithmic. So these are very weird and strange. So only strange people among us, like Thomas, like this kind of things. So I had no intent to study logarithmic VOAs. Yeah. So when people say logarithmic, it usually means that logs can appear in three places. One, in OPEs, when you compute coefficients. Second, in sense of Jordan blocks of decomposition into its non-semisimple. So it contains reducible but not indecomposable modules. So it has projectives and so on. So that's logarithm in the sense of kind of Jordan block structure. And then third sense in which it's logarithmic is its modular transformations involve not just expressions in Q, but a log of Q, namely tau, starts appearing. So that's the third way in which it's kind of logarithmic. And both, all three are bad. All three are the reasons why I never studied these things my whole career. And now they seem to come up. So I kind of have to pay attention. And that's what I want to tell you.
Should I think about the log of the OPEs
and the effect? I hope so. But again, I know very little about these guys. I don't Yeah, I don't know such interpretation. In fact, part of the reason I state this as a conjecture, and part of the reason it's kind of exciting and interesting, is that current literature of log VOAs and the corresponding non-semi simple modular tensor categories is very limited. So there are basically a couple of infinite families that we have. They're beautiful and related to Kasdan-Lustig correspondence and many other exciting things, but they're very, very limited. So this immediately says that there should be lots of them, and not only I want to say that there should exist such log VOAs, the rest will be somewhat constructive. As you'll see, I'll present constructive type evidence to this conjecture, which is interesting because it means that the universe of log VOAs is suddenly contains all these graphs at least, and probably even more.
So is it possible to explain is there any relation between these and the VOAs which you associated before them?
I don't know. Boris believes and has many kind of conceptual reasons why there should be a relation. It's a perfect subject for after-party discussion. But yeah, so it definitely somehow should be related to the previous story. I'll tell you one way which is much more pedestrian than this big scheme. So let's see, this is conjecture number one about this log VOAs. And then conjecture number two is the following statement. It could be thought of as a kind of mirror symmetry version for vertex algebras. So you can ask, what is the character such logarithmic VOA? So let me call it set of characters chi of q, and compare it to another logarithmic VOA, which you obtain by inverting the sign of all the labels. So remember, we had these labels ai, which were integers. So let's consider a operation where all ais are mapped to minus themselves. So then you get yet another log VOA associated to yet another data. And if you compare characters, at least for some of the modules of the original guy and the inverted guy, they have a funny property, which I'll call leaking, or it's morally going to be operation where Q is trying to become Q inverse. And on a tau plane, if this is complex tau plane, I can ask, how do these characters behave as tau goes to zero or some rational points on a real line in the tau plane? So then this will have some sort of expansion, sum over n, coefficient cn tau n. Perhaps there might be or might not be divergent piece, depending on particular case in hand. And the corresponding characters for the mirror version, where you obtain this log VOA by flipping the signs of A, will have analogous expansion, which will be perfect to fit on a lower part, on a lower half plane of the tau plane. So namely, it will be sum over n, same set of coefficients, cn. So conjecture is that these coefficients are the same, but you'll have minus tau to the power n. So index A runs over some subset of characters, and I'll tell you what it is in a little bit. So, but at this point, it's a statement about some particular set of characters which are associated with nice modules. And I don't actually have an intrinsic definition of this nice, but in the case of this graphs, I'll tell you what. Yes, yes, yeah. So that's how I'm going to tell you. Yeah, thank you.
Chi tilde of A means chi of minus A.
Chi tilde.
Sub A.
Oh, what happens to this A?
It's
It's not the same. I mean,
oh, sorry. I should call it B. Yeah, so let me call it B. Yeah, that's right. So, yes, Sasha is absolutely right. This is different.
That mean A is changed to minus
three. Right, so the A's, which were labels of the vertices, change the sign. Consider two different log view A's, compare them, or rather compare some sets of their characters, which match with this funny property that they cannot be analytically continued in a nice way to the lower half plane, but there are asymptotic expansions as we try to approach the real line where they can possibly meet. They're not well defined on this line, but there are asymptotic expansions agreed to all orders with a sign flip. So that's the property. OK, so now I can come to the point where I can finally give you at least one definition, or slowly get to my first definition. But let's see. Maybe I'll raise this too. Okay, so now I'm finally ready to start switching to math. The final two words of physics is the following, that in this setup, which I described in the first part of the talk, it's natural to consider various configurations which involve sandwiched 2D theories and 3D theories. So you can consider configurations where you have 3D n equals 2 theories sandwiched between various domain walls or interfaces and boundary conditions, all of which carry 2D 0, 2 degrees of freedom. So again, that's the physics part. The simplest setup of this sort is the following. You can consider your original 3D n equals 2 theory. So that's going to be, again, last word about physics, on a cylinder with various choices of two-dimensional boundary conditions on the boundary. So the whole geometry here, we put the three-dimensional n equals 2 theory on two-dimensional disk cross time, so think of this as time, or in fact, we can compactify it by identifying top and bottom of this R cross a two-dimensional disk. And then what the system computes is an object that I'm going to call Z hat. So in more general configurations, this is so-called half index, or Abhijit Gada likes to call it elliptic genus on three dimensions. So it's trying to be elliptic genus of a combined 3D 2D system because it has three-dimensional bulk and two-dimensional boundary. I'll call this boundary theory BA, or boundary condition BA. And sorry, this maybe B is a more appropriate thing. So that's the same B as before. And the corresponding partition function of this three-dimensional theory with boundary condition is going to be function of Q. If you think about Q as a complex structure on a boundary torus. So here, the boundary, so this system, if you identify top and bottom, is basically a solid torus. So it has a core, which contains this 3D n equals 2 theory, and it has a boundary outer shell, which is a normal torus. So let tau and the corresponding Q, which is 2 pi I tau, exponential of 2 pi I tau, be the complex structure of that. So sometimes this background is written as a Swan cross product with this Q of a disk. So that's how Mr. Waffle likes to write this. And since we have a boundary, we have to specify boundary conditions. So this is an object that depends on Q. It's holomorphic in Q. And it's trying to be elliptic genus of this combined system. In fact, if this 3D n equals 2 theory is gapped or gappable, then there is nothing inside, and it basically counts elliptic genus of the boundary condition. So that's the, again, I'm still talking about physics. So you can write it as a trace counting various operators, which you can find on the boundary of the system, of minus 1 to the f times q to the r over 2 plus j3, and so on and so forth. Now, transitioning slowly to math, in physics, usually these computations end up, if you use supersymmetry, as integrals. These are called localization integrals. So what you get often is some kind of contour integral over multiple variables. There'll be, in general, many axes of something that depends on three-dimensional bulk of the system multiplied by the usual elliptic genus of the boundary. And because usual elliptic genus is trying to be modular, I'll call it a theta. So thinking about this as a theta function, as if my boundary degrees of freedom have something to do with lattice algebra. So this is kind of structure of expressions that you get from three-dimensional localization or computation. But now I'm going to apply it to our system that we wanted to study from the beginning. And this will be the first definition. So first definition is define this object, z of q, as such integral, where theta is going to be theta function determined by a quadratic form q that we introduced in the very beginning. So that's a well-defined object. I can write down the expression, but I hope you know what I mean. And for the integrand, so therefore, this quadratic form depends on q in the usual way. It's basically sum over lattice and associated with the graph. And we have as many x's as vertices of the graph. So we actually have a bunch of xi's. So we'll do an integral over all of them on a unit circle in this complex space. And I have to tell you what this guy is. And this will be product over all the vertices of the original graph, corresponding variable labeled by v, where v is the vertex I'll call xv. And the integrand here will be xv minus 1 over xv to the power 2 minus degree of that vertex, meaning the valency. So this is how many things come into it or go out of it. OK. So this is my only definition. I didn't formalize it. I can say define Q series as such a thing. It's defined by a graph. So now, again, mathematicians may wake up because this is a well-defined object.
The group is SL2.
This is for SL2, right? Yeah. And the only kind of the contour of integration for all these variables xv is a unit circle. So it's a big, big torus. And if you ever encounter a problem, take the principal value integral.
Principal value is defined only to one variable.
Well, there is a Grothendieck version of principal value, so. Yeah. I mean, I try to give a light version of the talk. So the theorem about this thing is that, first of all, so if I am to state one theorem in this talk, is that for every graph that you can choose with any values of AI and so on and so forth, this object is convergent in the unit disk for absolute value of q less than 1. Second point of the theorem is that up to overall power of q, I'll call this offset by delta. It can be written as a power series with integer powers and integer coefficients. So that's a non-trivial statement. So this fellow belongs in z of q. What's interesting to topologists is that this object is this is not necessarily integer. So this can be. Oh yes. Sorry. Right. So q to the delta b. Yes.
This basically picks up a bunch of coefficients of the power series theta. If you do a residue over this is some Laurent polynomial multiplied by power series. So it just picks some linear combination.
Correct. Yes. Right.
On X of the theta series.
Yeah. The only thing that because see this power can be positive and negative, there could be infinitely many things. So for example, if it was a rational function, or I mean, sorry, it's always a rational function, but if it was only enumerated, that would be easy. So that would be trivial. But interesting thing is that depending on the structure of the graph, it contains a lot of things. So another interesting statement, interesting for topology, is that it's invariant under operations on this graph, which are called Kirby moves. So these are some operations which allow you to change the graph, some kind of blow-up operations where you say that this type of graph is related to, say, this type of graph with suitable changes of decorations and so on. Yeah, so that's precisely coming up next. So that's in some sense the punchline and the main point. So what's interesting is that in all of these cases that have been computed, that this happens to be characters chi b of some logarithmic
VOA. But you said those characters
No, they're modular transformation. So characters themselves are exactly of this form. So characters are OK. But their modular transformations are funny. And that precisely because it's logarithmic. So therefore, this is becomes a funny dictionary where starting with the data of a graph, you always obtain these characters of logarithmic VOAs. Again, I didn't ask for them, and I don't particularly care about them, but surprisingly, they come up. So therefore, one can now ask lots of questions. First of all, why this happens? So is there a physical or any other explanation? I honestly don't have one. Now, to answer another question that Sasha asked, what are these labels B? So B, I can say now very concretely, so B takes values in the set of abelian flat connections. On the three-manifold M3. And again, natural question is, what is this from the viewpoint of logarithmic VOA? So in this funny dictionary between either geometry or topology or graphs, and logarithmic VOAs, I have no idea what so special is about.
But any three-manifold theory, essentially, what would be there?
Well, B corresponds from the general point of actually, B is a subtle thing. So we discussed it in a paper with Putrev, Dupay, and Kummer and Waffa. It corresponds to so-called degenerate solutions to beta ansatz equations. And these are analogous to, you think about this as analogy to reducible flat connections, because abelian means reducible. So that's why some kind of degeneracy appears.
Yeah, but my question was whether it's possible to say it, but then sort of in some field theoretic way.
But notice that in field theoretic way, in general field theory, you will never get, or you rarely get, it's hard to control how to obtain in a canonical way such boundary conditions that you get power series expansions with all these properties, integralities, convergence inside unit disk, and not to mention other facts. So I don't know, first of all, in what generality this works. It definitely works in this program of theories coming from topology, so that I can vouch for. But again, I don't understand why. So this is one big question.
Can't you just consider like half twist? So you had a twist, but you can, that Q is sum of two scalar supercharges. But you
yes, yeah.
One of them, and then it gives you VOA.
On the boundary.
Well, again, I think it's you guys are in better position to answer this. I don't think it gives VOA right away. So it gives something. But I don't think, in particular, we tried hard. By the way, I should say that much of this is based on work called 3D modularity with many collaborators, including Miranda Chen, Francesca Ferrari, Sarah Harrison, and Sungbong Chun. So we tried, but it gives you something, but it doesn't necessarily, first of all, give you VOA. And I don't see how it gives this specific VOA. So a little bit more work is needed. So that's why I'm sure that some of you will see at least hints of it, and it would be good to answer question why. So the second question, more perhaps to our math colleagues, is, first of all, can we see this sort of correspondence between graphs, or perhaps more generally, I would have a dream of relating topology to algebra more mathematically, perhaps via Koha and other tools. Again, many other talks might be here handy or useful. And another question is, what kind of questions shall we ask about this logarithmic VOAs? So again, I'm not an expert on the subject. If you know something, please come tell me what we should be looking for. Because this seems to be funny duality, and I don't know what to do with that. So currently, what we're trying to do is to not just use this observation at the level of characters, but actually associate basic building blocks to edges and vertices of a graph to actually build this logarithmic VOA using extensions and BRST quotients and standard tools like that. So the idea would be that if you can associate some basic log VOAs to edges and vertices, then you can hopefully construct it by kind of gluing. So that's where it may relate to Thomas's talk, because these logarithmic VOAs, at least in simple cases, are generalizations of W algebras. In fact, that's how they were discovered originally. So I should probably stop here.
Is there a simple example where you can say what the log VOA is? Like length space or
three-square? Actually, for length space, it's not logarithmic. So that's a good news. It's fairly simple in that case. The first examples were, so the it's naturally organized by complexity of a graph. So for linear graph, which is still corresponds to length space, just with general LPQ, it's something simple and not logarithmic. First logarithmic example is where you have one trivalent vertex. And the reason trivalent is important because it's compared to, that's where you get first denominator. So that's where you start getting something really interesting. And in this world, you get, for example, VOA, which goes by the name 1, P singlet. So that's one of the well-studied families. And
There's no log in the OB here. It's like an actual
log. Well, it is logarithmic, right? There is a log.
In that sense,
though. Huh? Yeah, there is a log. It is logarithmic. So then next case is where you start having more of these things. In fact, I can extend it. So consider graphs with this structure. So what matters is maximal valencies or vertices. That's what it seems. And that's actually preserved by this Kirby move. So then you can consider either this graph or a structure of this nature with, again, many, many different vertices. So here you get P plus, P minus, characters of P plus P minus triplets, and even those are much less studied now. And then once you start increasing this complexity of a graph, you get into more and more unknown territories that I'm still learning from various friends. So these are some examples.
Other questions?
Can I ask a naive question? Suppose take a free manifold, multiply it by a circle, get a four manifold. Then according to your previous there's a usual VOA which you can associate with four manifold. Is it related in any way to this logarithmic VOA?
Probably the answer is yes. And exactly thoughts along these lines are I think, driving Boris.
What does he say?
I can tell you privately. no, I want to be completely. It's probably my lack of understanding of the story well enough that I'm a little bit shy to speculate too widely. I think I want to say honestly that it would be best to understand it more. So because. I'm a physicist, so that's why I carried a lot during this talk about physics. And physics is different, because if you consider M4, which is S1 cross M3, the corresponding theory T of M4, which was my intermediate stop, has actually two-dimensional 2,2 supersymmetry. This whole setup preserves only 0,2. So therefore, it cannot be directly related at the level of theory. So you have to relate it at the level of cohomologies or something like that. And still, there are, again, little gaps here and there. So I think it clearly shows a lot of connections. But at the same time, I think it's definitely it's not the same, first of all. Oh, that's a good question. They probably play a role because Yeah. So that's a good question. So they indeed maybe kind of share it between the two. Yeah. So because these flat connections do play a role in T of M4. Okay. So that's a good point. Yeah.
Well, if you just have a S1 times closed Riemann subs, then dimensional reduction of that S1 will give the T M4 for S1 cross M3, right?
Sorry. Say it again.
So if instead of D2, we have closed surface, we don't have to worry about boundary conditions, and then just reduce that 3D theory on S1. That's going to be TM4 for that S1 cross M3.
You have to be careful whether you keep KK modes. I always want to keep them, but I'm not sure what we'll gain there. Anyway, we can discuss. Oh yeah, it's orientation reversal. There is a canonical operation in topology. In fact, there is an analogous operation on M4 where you can take four manifold and flip orientation. Of course, for four sphere or standard four sphere, it won't do anything. But for CP2, it will take it to CP2 bar, and for K3, it will do something interesting. So, luckily, in this dictionary, it's kind of fun game to start asking, OK, what happens on algebraic side? So with Boris, we already saw what happens for VOA of M4. And indeed, it flips. It does pretty, very similar things. It tries to leak through the real axis in a tau plane. And surprisingly, very similar things happen even for three manifolds of what I told you here. Oh, that's another question to experts, and that's what we're trying to understand. Because from three manifold point of view with graphs, it looks like the two sides should be absolutely on the same footing. So where they have positive definite matrix Q and negative definite matrix Q obtained by the sign flip. But surprisingly, on log VOA side, one side is much more developed, so they don't look totally symmetric. And partly, this has to do with the structure of this Q series. So on one side, it has to do with so-called full theta functions. On the other, with Mach modular forms, which are slightly more complicated. So another question I could ask, again, the audience is, does anybody know? I know Thomas has a lot of thoughts about this, so we're talking. But does anybody else, other than Thomas, know about log VOAs whose characters are Mach modular forms, not full theta functions? So, and again, if somebody does, come talk to me or to me and Thomas. And
Another question is, thanks again.